Chapter 22. Pelagos, the Green Isles. At Pelagos, Queen Cressa and Lord Ambrice found Sea Wind at anchor, but they had to wait several days for Sea Maiden. Pelagos served as the capital of the Green Isles. It had the deepest and busiest harbour through which many ships stopped to exchange trade goods or to reprovision. This archipelago of volcanic islands speckling the turquoise sea included many scattered communities, large and small. While Ambrice set about supervising the provisioning of the ships, Cressa found a clothier that sold women's clothing ready-made. Green Isle citizens, men and women, generally wore a sashed, loose gown they called a craftan. But tailors were familiar with weir styles of gowns and split skirts. She bought some items and through the shop engaged seamstresses to sew new outfits more befitting her position. She also hired two ladies' maids to dress her hair and care for this elaborate wardrobe. One was named Arletti. She was a Green Isles widow in her early 20s who was skilled with a needle. The other, Piquetta, an older woman whose gentle hands worked her way through Cressa's neglected blue hair, reminded her of Nana. So it came to pass that on planting day, Queen Cressa of Weerendale called a council of Ambrice, Lord of the Ships, Captain Clemson of the Queen's Shield, Seamaster Bashkim of Sea Sprite, Seamaster Willamara of Sea Wind, Seamaster Gordo of Sea Maiden, and Magistrar Destra of the Green Isles. The council convened in Pelagos's Magistrate Hall in the Old Quarter. The room was high-ceilinged and airy, with walls covered with large maps. As was the Green Isle custom, the participants sat in low-to-the-ground wicker chairs, arranged to face one another. Next to each stood an even lower side table, holding a pitcher of fruit juice mixed with wine and a bowl of nuts. Cressa recognised Seamaster Willamara because she had officiated at her investiture in Cascada. She always marvelled at the female Seamaster, because unlike Kinley or Sina, nothing about her bespoke physical prowess. She was of normal height and build. Willamara could have been a schoolteacher or a shopkeeper rather than a captain of a crew of 200, until one noticed her perpetually peeling red nose, which bespoke days spent out of doors, and her piercing metal grey eyes, which tolerated no fools. Gordo was a new face to Cressa. He had been Sea Maiden's first mate, assuming command only after his captain died in a clash with the Pellish. Magistra Destra, their hostess, turned out to be a woman with high cheekbones, dressed in an unsashed craftan of white, with long coily brown hair streaked with several old colours, worn in a single side plait that reached to her waist. It was impossible to guess her age. She could be 30 or 50. She wore no adornment of any kind other than a bracelet of entwined leaves that symbolised the worship of Vertia, the spirit of growth. Cressa immediately understood why Ambrice wanted her included. Destra exuded an air of calm competence, and her eyes reflected a kind smile. Cressa explained the situation to the assembled group. Then Gordo and Willamara related their experience since they separated from Sea Pearl. Both had seen scores of black-sailed Pellish ships that gave them wide berth. At ports of call, they had heard many tales of the pirates' predations and cruelty. A pox on these pirates! They had been plaguing the Turquoise Sea for 20 years or more. Cressa wanted to concentrate on plans to regain her throne. With the Weir army under the control of her enemies, what would it take to invade? 10,000 infantry? "Do you command an army of 10,000? Asked Destra.
"Of course not," said Ambrice. He rose and restlessly began to walk around the room, intermittently studying the maps on the walls. "Our sailors excel at sea battles. The only land troops we can muster are some 20 shields like those four presently standing in your entry hall.
Then I fear you have no hope of regaining Weirendale through force. Nor, of course, of conquering Oromondo, which maintains the largest and fiercest standing army in Enneamon. Their soldiers call themselves protectors, as if their role were purely defensive, but during the War of the Priests, they invaded their neighbours as if their name was conquerors. Cressa could hardly gainsay this assessment, but its bleakness crushed her. I should never have left. Destra turned to face Cressa. I met your mother, Queen Katrina the Strategist, once, many years ago. Katrina once wisely told me that one must know the past, but never spend a moment regretting it. Destra held out her palms. Because only the future flows through our hands. But if I can't undo my flight, and we can't recapture Cascada, our hands are empty.
I think not, Your Majesty, answered Destra.
One might wonder if you aim at the wrong target. I see before me a young queen who, like her father, is quite comfortable on the sea, who married a seamaster, who is followed by sea captains, who is connected to Lortharod, the greatest naval power of them all. Ambrise broke in.
Oh, we should go with our strength, not our weakness. We have no cavalry and no infantry, but we have a navy, or at least the start of a navy.
Willemara took up the thread, eagerly leaning forward.
The rest of our war galleots, Sea Ghost, Sea Wolf, Sea Dog, would surely gather round us if they were called to rendezvous.
We have many friends and kin in the fleet. We know they are loyal to our queen and lord,
put in Bashkim.
Fuck, if Queen Kara could slip out of Cascada's harbour, she'd join up with us too.
But what good would it do us to muster a larger navy? Asked Captain Clemson, looking confused.
You speak aright, Clemson, said Cressa. This discussion is not germane to the problem at hand.
She glanced at Destra again and slowly spoke her thoughts out loud.
Unless we don't declare war on Oromondo, nor storm Weirendale.
We declare war on the Oro's ally, Pexlia.
Indeed, said Destra.
The Pelish have been preying on many nations' ships and raiding every seacoast town. Every country in the world would send ships to join your fleet. One might hazard that given this target, Lortharod, with the strongest navy in the world, would willingly send a large contingent.
Forgive a landlubber's confusion, Clemson broke in again. But say we followed this course of action, say we broke the back of the Pelish pirate fleet, how does that help get my queen back on the Nargis throne?
Destra did not answer directly. Instead, she looked down to her lap. Queen Cressa, how are your enemies explaining your absence from Cascada? How long have you been gone? Cressa calculated.
Over 3 moons. I left well before winter solstice. They can't say I'm dead because I might inconveniently appear alive somewhere. Besides, the fountains flow on.
Seeing Destra's puzzled expression, Cressa explained.
The two Nargis fountains, in the throne room and in the middle of the city of Cascada, are linked to the lives of Nargis queens. When a queen dies, they pause. If the line of queens breaks, they stop altogether. So every Weir citizen must know I live still. The councillors will have fabricated some story that hints at betrayal of the country.
Indeed. You know that Pelagos attracts a large number of spies working for the great powers. Gossip has reached even my ears of an illicit relationship with a councillor, one Bilcazar, I believe, remarked Destra. Or maybe it's Belcazar. I'm afraid I'm not very good with foreign names.
That's absurd. That's a lie. Tell me who told you that and I will challenge him,
fumed Clemson, his hand reaching for his sword hilt.
Ambrice chortled and walked over behind Cressa's chair to lay his hands on her shoulders.
Do we need to discuss this in private, my heart?
Cressa laughed. To the room, Ambrice remarked,
This wild story does explain her absence and impugns her honour, but what about the Princella?
Ah, they have bruited about that the heir visits with her kin in Lothrod.
And if my family in Lothrod came forth and proclaimed that Cerulea is not there, that she has been hidden away from would-be assassins?
Cressa patted Ambrice's hand.
This would be a powerful counter-narrative that might disturb your citizens, would it not?
Answered Destra.
Though you should know that they also spread a whisper campaign that Nargis has withdrawn her favour to the line of Nargis queens, that the Princella has not been granted a talent. On occasion I'm told these two slanders meet and twist together. The Princella is devoid of magic because she is actually the offspring of this Belthazar.
Oh, for water's sake! Cressa snapped, more angry about disparagement of Cerulea than she was about whispers about herself.
But what if, said Seamaster Willemara, warming to the theme, our noble queen, with her loving husband at her side, emerged and publicly raised her banners against the pirates of the seas?
Clemson said thoughtfully,
That would make the councillors back in Cascara lose face. They would be shown up as uninformed or duplicitous.
And what if, Ambrice added, stories began to circulate about my lady's brave and stalwart actions fighting the pirates?
He resumed his seat again, rubbing his hands together.
Ah, my lord, said Destra, pointing at him with her index finger. One might suppose you have put your finger on the quick of it.
The only way that Queen Cressa will win back her throne is if she wins the favour of the people of Weirendale. The councillor's power lies in their control of the populace. Let her defeat the Pelish, gain the acclaim of all nations and prove her leadership, and even those who betrayed her will have to line the streets of Cascada with white roses.
Queen Cressa looked directly at Destra.
If we undertook to rid the Green Isles of the Pelish, we would also be helping your people.
Destra had a musical laugh.
Trust and shared interests form the best alliances, do they not?
How much would the Green Isles contribute to this alliance? Cressa pressed.
Let me be frank, replied Destra. The Green Isles are but a loose confederation.
One would think that as the highest government official I have broad authority, but actually many scattered islands pay no attention to the decrees from Palagos. The inhabitants live in isolation and go their own ways. We have a sparse treasury and no armed forces, but I will contribute everything that is within my power to provide.
Islanders don't like to boast, but you may find my counsel valuable.
Cressa pressed her lips together. Yet fighting the Pelish might prove a long campaign. They have so many hideouts on so many isles. My people will think I have abandoned them.
And my daughter. My daughter will think I have abandoned her.
Ambrice read her thoughts. He said softly,
My heart, I don't see another option.
After a long pause, Cressa turned to Destra, remarking,
I understand why the Oros would be in bed with the Pelish. They want to send their priests to proselytize and win converts. They also want to capture cargoes of foodstuffs. What I don't understand is why the Pelish lie abed with the Oros. I also don't understand why the Oros fixate on Weirendale as their nemesis.
I agree we do not have answers to some key questions. As for the Pelish, did you ask any of the pirates you captured?
Ask the pirates? Clemson grew outraged at the suggestion. They attacked my queen. They didn't survive the battle.
Pity. Well, we'll see if we can locate a specimen to question. In the meantime, perhaps you might make arrangements for your grand mustering of the fleet. Tomorrow might suit in Pelagos' central square.
Tomorrow, said Cressa, stunned at the sudden speed of events.
Aye, said Ambrose. No profit in delay. Let's strike immediately.
If you will excuse me, said Destra, I need to make arrangements for something simpler, our mid-meal. The five weirs warmed to their task, each coming up with better ideas of how to reveal Queen Cressa's whereabouts, declare war on Pexlia, and inspire other mariners to join their cause. The luncheon, served in a nearby room where one wall opened to a colourful garden, consisted of fish and fruit in a delicate sauce. The tasty fare turned the conversation in a lighter direction. Gordo teased Willemara about which of her many suitors she would favour. Bashkim, for the first time, spoke longingly of his family back home. Destro revealed that she was not a Green Islander by birth, but a former citizen of the Free States. Of course, the Islanders couldn't agree on one of their own as Magistrar. They chose me precisely because I'm an outsider with no favoured birth isle. Her Free States background accounted for the glint of gold in Destra's hair. In the light of the dining hall, which had a thatched roof but walls open to the breezes, Cressa saw it clearly. She'd been taught, however, that all of Eager's old colour and all its magic had been wiped out centuries ago. Could Destra wield any of Eager's ancient power of transformation? After the meal had been cleared, Destra brought three islanders into the hall to meet the weirs. I'd like to present Donna Simonetta and her kin, Don Jarrett and Don Larrett, she said.
We are pleased to meet you, said Cressa. Please rise. How can we be of service?
We think we might be able to be of service to you, Your Majesty, said Simonetta. She looked close to Cressa's age, but years in the sun had made her skin darker brown and leathery. Her hair, pulled up in a horsetail on the top of her head, shone full, shimmering green, the green of fresh-hatched leaves. Her craftan's fabric was deep turquoise with green stripes.
We three hail from a tiny isle, Solterra, way, way south. The Pelish overran it 2 years ago and destroyed our kin and our village.
You have my condolences, Donna, said Lord Ambrose. I've heard this sort of story much too often.
Simonetta nodded and stayed silent for a moment. The isles, you know, they are all unique and oddly formed. Some harbours any fool could see, some you'll never find.
But you can find the harbours,
Willemara had heard the unstated claim.
Most islanders only fish their own waters. How have you gained such expertise?
Solterra has a natural chain of ponds, perfect for salt pools. For decades we have produced the most and, though islanders don't like to boast, the tastiest salt in the isles. And then our boats traded north, west, everywhere.
The young men both wore their darker green and brown hair in a bowl cut with bangs and had on deep blue craftans with white waist sashes.
The reason we survived the Pelish raid, said one of them, was we were away on deliveries. Larrett and me, we have sailed throughout the isles since we were but the size of sea urchins. Simonetta handled the money and drove the bargains. We handled the boats.
Islanders don't like to boast, said Larrett with an easy smile, but we know more harbours than Vertia has forgotten.
What price for your unique pilot services? Asked Willemara.
Aye, indeed, Seamaster, we ask a price beyond treasure, answered Donna Simonetta. At the end of this war, we want Solterra back. We three, we share one dream. We wish to sit on our porches and sprinkle our roasted mutton fish with our salt, watch the sun go down, and feel the shades of our kinfolk at ease.
Done, said Ambrose, and he jumped up to clasp wrists with all three islanders.
The Weir Seamasters returned to their ships to make preparations, but Magistra Destra asked Queen Cressa and Lord Ambrose to tarry with her a moment.
Actually, we happen to have a Pelish mariner enjoying the hospitality of ourselves right now. I thought we should hold on to him in case we ever need to ransom a citizen. Looking at Cressa, she asked, one might wonder if you'd care to question him.
Cressa was not surprised that Destra sensed her talent. She was just grateful that her hostess had approached her privately. Ambrose, however, found the suggestion offensive.
Why bring the Queen into such business? If he need be questioned, let me send Clemson and some shields.
No, my lord. I am the one to do it. Come, I'll show you, said Cressa.
Destra led them across the street to Pelagos's central jail and through the building to a dank underground cell of stone with a tiny portal for an entrance. Cressa requested that the jailers chain the captive to the wall. Then she entered with Ambrose, who kept his hand on his dagger, and Destra, who carried a lantern. Though dirty and wild-eyed, the prisoner was of higher rank than the pirates who had attacked Sea Sprite. His black waistcoat skirt and his wrist braces were made of real sealskin and studded with silver buttons. Bright pink tufts of hair stood out from a brown background all around his head, and his expression showed that he recognised the Queen's old colour. As Cressa approached, he pulled as far away as his chains would allow and heaped curses on her in ancient Pelish.
Until she placed her hand on his shoulder and ordered, "Stop that."
He quieted instantly.
"Tell us your name and rank," she commanded.
"I am Admiralini Heptex. I control the Southern Quadrant."
"Southern Quadrant of what?" Cressa asked, puzzled.
"Of the Green Isles."
"So you are not striking spontaneously. You are organised."
"Naturally," he grinned. "We communicate over distance by means of trained petrels."
She had the prisoner in her power. She no longer needed to maintain physical contact, so she stepped back the better to watch his face. "And what do you want?"
"Plunder and slaves for us, slaves to row our galleys, foodstuffs for our allies, the Ormondians."
"Why do you feel you have the right to take from others?"
Cressa's tone grew censorious.
"The right?"
The captive laughed.
"How naive you are. We have the need. You must be very ignorant about Bexlia. Our soil is exhausted and we have no mines, no marble quarries, and no fat fisheries. Once we had tall groves of teak, but these now lie depleted. No spirit looks out for us. We call ourselves Pexlia the Abandoned. Need provides right."
"Your king or queen should treat with other nations."
Again he laughed, without mirth.
"Which one? In my years we've had five, each murdered by the next greedy idiot, avid for the teak throne."
Cressa paced a few steps in the tiny room. "Why did you ally yourselves with the Oros?"
"They pay extremely well, and they treat us properly. Other nations call us dirty Pelish, or say we stink. The Ormondians call us Lords of the Sea. If we find a light-haired child for them to raise, they praise us as beloved brethren.
Revenge. Respect. Like all peoples, the Pelish want respect. And a way to feed their families. And to spit in the faces of those who have more. What would Weirendale be without Nargis's favour?
Do you worship the Oro's magi?
Their magi wield fearsome powers. They deserve a man's worship. But unlike our cousins, the Zelish, we have never been a particularly devout people. When the Ormondians come around, we worship. When they aren't, by...
He shrugged. Why do the Oros focus their wrath on Weirendale?
The queen pressed.
This comes from their magi. I'm not privy to their wisdom.
Cressa turned to Ambrice, who had been standing with his mouth open behind her.
What else do you want to know?
Your talent.
Now? He exclaimed.
Yes, said Cressa with a sigh. When I really needed it, when the realm really needed it, I found it.
Can you ask him about the location and strength of their entire fleet? And the ports of call where they provision, and their spies and allies, where are they placed, and what are their names, and who and where is their admiral? Can you get all that?
I can make him tell me everything he knows, and make him forget afterward that he ever saw us.
Turning to their host, Ambrice said, Magistrar Destra, might I have some paper, ink and quills? Would a small writing table fit in here?
The next day at mid-morning, Pelagos saw pageantry the likes of which had never before graced that island. A blare of trumpets and the beat of drums started the procession. 200 sailors dressed sharply in official uniforms of blue with white sashes paraded through the streets and under the stone arch leading to the old quarter. After them came Queen Cressa, garbed magnificently in blue, with jewels adorning her blue hair, mounted on Nightmist, whose coat now gleamed, with her husband, Ambrice, Lord of the Ships, riding a black horse half a length behind.
During my dedication, I moved in a trance, still shocked and mourning my mother. This feels more like a true coronation than the earlier ceremony. Or is it... that I have finally become a true queen.
The members of the Queen's Shield, 4 a horse and another 16 on foot, flanked the royals. The Queen's Shield carried an enormous Weir flag, the blue river and green banks on a white background borrowed from Sea Pearl's mast for the occasion. After the flag came another 200 sailors, the crews from all 4 ships. As crowds gathered, the procession circled Pelagos's green square, a garden boasting a statue of Vertia surrounded by low plantings. Then the Queen and Lord dismounted and climbed to the top steps of the Magistrate Hall that fronted the square's north side. Destra came out of the door and knelt in greeting. Cressa took her hand and bid her rise. The trumpets blew another fanfare.
We have chosen your fair city as the place to announce matters of consequence to all nations,
proclaimed Cressa in her loudest, proudest voice.
For too long, the Pelish pirates have disrupted trade, stolen goods, terrorized citizens, killed the innocent and enslaved your kin. I have left the comforts of my home country, Weirendale, because this plague can no longer be countenanced. With my beloved husband, Ambrice, Lord of the Ships, at my side and at the helm, I intend to forge an alliance of navies and lead it in driving the Pelish out of the Isles, indeed out of the seas of the civilized nations.
Applause and shouts rang from all sides.
Your wise magistrate has blessed this endeavor. We will always be thankful to her and to you, brave citizens. Thus, it is in Pelagos that we, the rightful rulers of Weirendale, pledge our undying efforts to defeat such piracy once and for all, so that a merchant might trust his goods, a sailor might sail these seas, a fisherwoman might catch her dinner, and towns might live in peace, without fear of the depredations that for too long have been tolerated as if they were part of nature, like the rain. The Pelish pirates do not have to be tolerated. They must be stopped. With your help, and by the grace of Nargis and the blessing of your spirit, Vertia, that is what Ambrice and I intend to do.
At a sign from Cressa, two captains carried a generous offering of fruit and greens to the feet of the grand marble statue of Vertia in the middle of the square. Magistrat Destra stepped forward. She appeared without retinue, still garbed only in white. Her simplicity spoke of her confidence. Holding her arms outstretched, Destra called out in a ringing voice,
"As our friends the Rothers say, be it thus and ever so. Vertia the Bountiful, let us grow fruitful."
Cressa strove to use her talent to persuade the minds of the throng of onlookers.
"People of Pelagos, I plead for your help. We need seamen to join our ranks. We need shipmasters to ferry messages. And we need all of you to spread this news far and wide across the isles and beyond. Will you join with us?"
Her sailors broke out into wild cheering. The 2,000 or more Green Isle citizens who had turned out to see the pageantry joined in. As Cressa and Ambrice shared a public kiss, the Queen's Shield started yelling her name, "Cressa! Cressa! Cressa!" The crowd picked up the cry until the stones of the old quarter echoed with it. The procession wound back to the docks where the Queen and her husband boarded Sea Pearl. A great cheer went up when they reappeared on deck, waving to the onlookers, and another when sailors re-hoisted the Weirendale flag to the top of the mainsail. By the score, islanders came up to talk to the Weir mates who had set up stations on the dock. Years of pirate raids had traumatized them so severely that many just wanted to share their scarring tales of how the Pelish had stolen their cargo, burned their seacoast village, or killed their kin. Others wanted to hire on as sailors. Several offered their vessels as message carriers. On the evening's tide, the first wave of fishing and trading boats carrying crucial missives and instructions left for all the major cities of the Green Isles, for Lortharod, Rortharod, the Free States, Gulltown, the coastal city of the Duchy of Androvale, and even for Cascada, the capital city of Weirendale.